You're listening to This Week in Cardiology from theheart.org on Medscape.
Hi, everyone. This is John Mandrola from theheart.org on Medscape. This is This Week in Cardiology for August 14th, 2015. This week, I'm going to talk about cardiology's blind spot, exercise in the elderly, mental illness as a risk factor for cardiovascular disease, and the dangers of southern food. The big news this week came from the New England Journal of Medicine, and it wasn't the top-line result of the BARI 2D trial that really struck me. It was the second finding. Recall that BARI 2D was a randomized clinical trial of more than 2,300 patients with type 2 diabetes and ischemic heart disease, stable coronary artery disease. The original BARI 2D was published in 2009 in the New England Journal of Medicine, and it showed that there was no benefit over medical therapy of a urgent revascularization strategy. So this current analysis of BARI 2D centered on the question of whether troponin levels would be useful. The investigators asked two questions. One, is the high-sensitivity troponin level valuable in predicting future risk? And secondly, would patients with high levels of troponin benefit from urgent revascularization? And the results of this trial were striking and clear. First, yes, troponin levels did indeed predict risk. Those with high levels of high-sensitivity troponin had double the risk of an adverse outcome at 5 years. But no, urgent revascularization did not make a difference. And let me restate this. These are diabetic patients with enough vascular disease to warrant revascularization and high levels of troponin that got no benefit from urgent revascularization with stents or bypass when compared to medical therapy. Now, last week, I wrote about the RITA 3 trial, the 10-year results of the RITA 3 trial, which was a comparison of a routine interventional strategy versus a delayed or selective strategy in patients with unstable angina. I got a fair amount of criticism from that, and one of the criticisms was that RITA 3 did not have troponin levels, and if we had troponin levels, we'd be better able to risk stratify and maybe find a subset of patients that would benefit. Well, here we have it. We have patients with heart disease, diabetes, and troponin, and yet no benefit to urgent revascularization. My friends, this is not surprising news. We've known about atherosclerosis for a long time. What is surprising to me is our collective blind spot to this clear and consistent evidence of the limits of focal solutions for systemic diseases. Next up, I want to talk about exercise in the elderly. My wife, Stacy, is a hospice and palliative care physician, and she teaches that inactivity or not moving is one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse. One of my closing remarks as I leave the room in the clinic of patients, older patients, is to keep moving. We cardiologists like to talk a lot about life-extending therapies. I mean, we tout the benefits of statins and beta blockers and ACE inhibitors and bypass surgery. But we mustn't forget the obvious, which is exercise. So researchers from France performed a meta-analysis of 9 cohort studies totaling more than 122,000 patients. They published this in the British Journal of Sports Medicine, and the results are not surprising. Even low levels of physical activity in the elderly reduced risk by up to 22%. Those older subjects who did more exercise got more benefit, with risk reductions as high as 35% for very active people. So I realize this isn't a high-tech story, but it's important. It's never too late for people to discover the benefits of exercise. It's our job as doctors to prescribe effective therapies. We must prescribe exercise. We must help our patients understand that movement is critical and that it is like a drug or a procedure, and it's useful and beneficial. Move, 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 I say. Next, I want to mention the mental illness as a heart disease risk factor. The American Heart Association is on a roll. last week they published a beautiful consensus statement that called our attention to the societal factors responsible for creating the inflammatory soup that we live in the Western world today. This week, they've released another scientific statement that underscores the increasing prevalence of depression and mood disorders in our youth, and that these disorders of the brain are important risk factors for cardiovascular disease. The new paper is published online in Circulation, and I didn't know this, but a Tier 2 moderate risk status means that there's pathological or pathophysiological evidence for arterial dysfunction that could indicate accelerated atherosclerosis under the age of 30. Under the age of 30 with accelerated atherosclerosis. I mean, I ride bikes with 30-year-olds, and they're perfect and fast, and 30 should be a peak of our health. So I'm no pediatrician, and maybe you wonder why I would even mention a story like this, and I'm drawn to it because it speaks to the connection between the brain and the heart. It highlights the relevance of seeing the person in front of us rather than their ECG squiggles or their LDL or their CRP levels. It speaks to the value of asking our patients about their lives and to get a picture of who our patient really is. And the most obvious news of the week is about Southern food. A population-based longitudinal study of middle-aged adults showed that eating food known as Southern comfort food is bad for your heart. Now, for my international listeners, you may not recognize what Southern food is. Here we talk about fried chicken, mashed potatoes, piles of bacon, and other processed meats. And that's not it. Usually, these foods are washed down with hefty portions of sugar-sweetened beverages such as sweet tea. The caloric content of a typical meal like this might require a Tour de France stage to neutralize all the calories. And so this stunning revelation from the REGARD study was published in Circulation, and it was so important that it even garnered an editorial. And I agree with the lead author of the study, Dr. James Shikani, who told Heartwire on Medscape that he believes it's important to not tell patients to cut out foods like this, but to cut down on foods like this. I'll say, I mean, cutting down on these sorts of foods is very important. And again, it's not a high-tech story, but these days in my EP clinic here in the southeastern United States, I find myself more and more helping patients with strategies to cut down on excess calories and strategies to exercise more. Because we know that the recent results in atrial fibrillation therapy is that pushing away from the table and getting up and going for a walk and exercising may be the best antiarrhythmic therapy that we can offer. So that's it for this week in cardiology. In a couple weeks, we're going to be heading to European Society of Cardiology meetings in London. There'll be a lot of news there. So until next week, this is John Mandrola from the Heart.org on Medscape.
You're listening to This Week in Cardiology from the Heart.org on Medscape.